County election judges across Texas are scrambling. A historic number in the Lone Star State, 15 million, have registered to vote in Tuesday's election, and early voting is already breaking records. Still, voters have some questions, as public radio reporters found out when we launched a project called TX Decides. We asked Texans to send us the election questions they most wanted us to answer. I'm Shelley Koffler, and in this special edition of Fronteras, the reporters are responding. Let's start with the observation that despite this year's strong early voting and registration, turnout in Texas has been below the national average for the past few decades, often south of 50%. And that's led to one of the questions we tackled. It came from Stephen Kelman of San Antonio, who asked this.
Why do most Texans eligible to vote not bother to cast a ballot?
Marfa Public Radio's Travis Bubenik dug into that one, exploring what low voter turnout could mean for the future of our state.
Stephen Kelman teaches comparative literature at UTSA in San Antonio, and he's a very engaged voter. He can rattle off voting stats like he's a government computer and cite anecdotes about, you know, that time at the Constitutional Convention when
someone came up to Benjamin Franklin and said to him, Dr. Franklin, what do we have, a monarchy or a republic? And Franklin is supposed to have said, a republic, if you can keep it.
He's clearly invested in democracy, but he worries about where it's headed.
Representative democracy requires active engagement of its citizens. If that does not occur, then it disintegrates into an oligarchy or a plutocracy or a monarchy. And I don't think that that is what we really want.
So then why don't most Texans vote? At a West Texas bar the night of the last presidential debate, artist John Bernard's shooting a game of pool and not paying attention to the TV. That's because he's not voting this year for the first time.
I have voted for everybody. I even voted for George Bush. I voted for Bill Clinton. I voted for right, left, whatever. But this time I am very, very upset because there is no choice.
Bernard's a Houstonian, originally from Switzerland. He says lots of people vote there, and he does care about voting. But this year, he's just too disgusted with both Clinton and Trump. And he says, in Texas, a red state that's probably going to go for Trump, he doesn't think his vote matters anyways.
If I was in another state, maybe I would look at it differently. But right now, I want to make a stand.
Rice University professor and political science fellow Mark Jones says there's actually something to that.
In most counties and most legislative districts, we know who's going to win in November. And that's one less incentive for people to turn out to vote.
Now, it's tempting to stop there, to say, well, I guess Texans just don't care or just feel let down by the system. But there's more to it than psychology. Research shows there are a lot of Texans who are less likely to vote just based on their life circumstances and who they are. Texas has more younger, poorer, less well-educated, and Latino people than most other states. And then there are the legal obstacles like the voter ID law that sometimes come into play.
All of those factors combine to make a socio-demographic or socioeconomic context in which voting is almost predestined to be low.
Jones says those external factors, as you might call them, combine with those internal feelings of disillusionment to keep Texas voter turnout steadily low. But what about Stephen Kelman's broader question? What does this all mean for the future of democracy? Are we really heading toward a future where just a few Texans make decisions for the entire state? Professor Jones says, not quite.
Turnout has been dropping, but it's leveled off over the past 20 years. And did it actually experience a small spike with President Obama's election in 2008. So I'd say more than anything else, we're in a holding pattern with a suboptimal level of turnout.
So while turnout is likely to stay relatively low, individual campaigns and candidates can have some effect. This year's election is looking to be an interesting case study. You might think people would be less likely to cast a ballot since Clinton and Trump are the least liked candidates in modern political history. But the Pew Research Center recently found that overall interest in this election is higher than it's been since the early 90s, and Texas has a record number of registered voters this year. In Marfa, I'm Travis Bubenik.
As Travis mentioned, it's no secret Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump are two of the most disliked major party nominees to run for president in recent history. And that has some Texans like Kaya Tingley of Austin searching for options.
Can we vote for either Green Party or Libertarian candidates in Texas?
Well, Kaya, Texas Public Radio's Ryan Poppy has an answer to that. He also looked further into the rules for selecting third-party and write-in candidates in Texas.
In a French bakery near Austin, I caught up with Kaya Tingley, busily answering emails on her laptop. Tingley's a digital marketing consultant, a mother of two, and an unenthused voter. She researched Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and says she doesn't like either of them.
I'm actually still undecided. I mean, I know I'm not voting for Trump.
But when she talks to friends and family about the possibility of voting for someone else, she gets pushback.
If you talk about voting for a third-party candidate, there's an enormous wave of peer pressure coming back to say, oh, you can't do that or the other guy will win.
Disapproval of her peers aside, Tingley could easily vote for Libertarian Gary Johnson or the Green Party's Jill Stein. Texas Secretary of State Carlos Costco says, like Trump and Clinton, Johnson and Stein both met the requirements.
In Texas, a third-party candidate such as the Libertarian or the Green Party, if they received 5% or more of votes in the last general election, then they are qualified to be on the ballot.
Both Stein and Johnson's parties reached that threshold in Texas during the 2014 statewide elections. That's also one of the reasons Stein's been campaigning in Texas, positioning her Green Party for the election 4 years from now.
If we get to 5%, then it's a whole new ballgame. Then we're on the ballot, we're a recognized political party.
Without that 5%, Secretary Costco says a third-party presidential candidate can still get on the Texas ballot by presenting a petition signed by 1% of Texas's registered voters. That's roughly 150,000 signatures. Kai Tingley certainly isn't the only Texan toying with the idea of voting third party. Dawn Westerberg often votes Republican and is facing some backlash when she tells friends she's voting for Johnson instead of Trump.
First, there's absolute fury from those who support Trump and say, well, if you don't support Trump, that means you support Mrs. Clinton.
In downtown Austin, I met Andrea Ryden. She says she usually votes Democrat, but she's leaning towards Stein.
I was undecided at one point. I don't really stand for what the other two candidates are going for, so I was just looking for an alternate option.
Then there's the case of Courtney Dry, who I met waiting on a city bus. Dry is a former Bernie Sanders supporter and wishes that he was running as an independent.
I read this article that if Bernie Sanders stayed, like all of them actually voted for him, then it could actually all be completely voided, I guess you would say, because neither of the candidates would reach 270 votes.
270, by the way, is the number of electoral votes the winning presidential candidate has to capture. Now, Dry says, she wants to write in his name on the November ballot. Secretary of State Costco says the votes for some write-in candidates will be counted.
For statewide races, they are certified by our office, and we have 13 certified write-in candidates that will be eligible to be running in the elections.
Eligible write-in candidates had to declare their candidacy and file their paperwork between July and August. Election officials legally must post a list of those candidates for president in every voting booth and include a list with the ballot sent in the mail. But if you write in the name of someone who isn't on that certified list, someone like Bernie Sanders, well, that vote won't be counted. In Austin, I'm Ryan Poppy.
No doubt you've heard some claims by candidates and voters that our elections are rigged. That led a number of Texans to ask us how election officials can verify the accuracy of our votes. Three of the state's largest counties, Bexar, Harris, and Travis, use paperless electronic voting systems. So here's what Joan Cunningham of San Antonio wants to know.
How will vote recording errors and even fraud be prevented where paper records are not created and kept?
Houston Public Media's Andrew Schneider has the answer.
Joan Cunningham grew up in Canada and remembers watching people vote the old-fashioned way, fill out a paper ballot, drop it in a box. She understands electronic voting machines can be more efficient.
But my professional life was spent as an epidemiologist. I used and still do computers a lot for everything I do. And I have some practical insights into the things that can go wrong, data that can get corrupted or changed or lost.
Pamela Smith says Cunningham's concerns are legitimate. Smith is president of Verified Voting, a nonprofit, nonpartisan group that examines the role of technology in elections.
People sometimes think software is infallible, but in fact, it's programmed by humans, and humans are not infallible. So you can have errors in programming. There have been actual errors in programming in past elections that have been uncovered by doing audits and recounts.
That, Smith says, is one of the reasons for audits and recounts. In those cases, the main benefit of paper backups is providing a physical record of voter intent. It's as much to reassure the individual voter as it is to provide proof for election officials. And in this unprecedented presidential election, voters are looking for more reassurance.
If everyone's here, I want to welcome you.
And Texas officials, like Harris County Clerk Stan Stannard, want to lay these fears to rest. Harris County switched from punch cards to an electronic voting system in 2002. The current system uses no paper backups. But Stannard says there are checks and double checks to make sure everything is working and untampered with.
We have your vote recorded in three locations. That is in the mobile ballot box, the actual internals of the judge booth controller, and every one of the eSlate voting machines that the voter actually casts their vote on.
Experts say such systems aren't perfect, but Stannard argues paperless is actually far more secure.
The problems with paper are that you can run out of ink, a printer can break, then you get into a problem of, okay, now what do I count? And also the technology that it takes to cheat with paper, like we saw in the days when we had the punch cards. All it took was an ice pick with a stack of cards to ram hose through and punch cards. You're canceling out someone's vote or voting for someone else.
Paper ballot issues crop up regularly in the Rio Grande Valley. The area has a history of election fraud and has been the subject of recent federal and state investigations. Morgan Cisneros Graham chairs the Cameron County Republican Party and serves on the county's election commission.
You know, it's very unfortunate when I hear or read people say that they're not going to bother to vote because they know that the results are likely not to be accurate.
So any election system, electronic or paper, is only as reliable as the people running it. Most counties vigorously vet and train poll workers to make sure they administer the systems fairly. Among them this year will be Joan Cunningham, who asked the question that inspired this story.
I felt that I needed to do my part, if you will, to ensure that all is well. So I went and took the training to be an elections judge, and I will be serving as an assistant judge at one of the polling stations here in San Antonio on Election Day.
Though she's lived in the U.S. for 30 years, Cunningham just became a citizen in 2014. This will be her first presidential vote. In Houston, I'm Andrew Schneider.
Coming up on Fronteras, our special TX Decides program continues to answer your election questions. Like, why do Texas congressional districts have such jagged boundaries?
Political parties want to draw the lines so that they are more likely to keep power and to keep their opposition from getting power.
The answer to that and how a once blue Texas became ruby red after this. I'm Shelley Koffler, and this is a special Fronteras election program called TX Decides. TX Decides, by the way, is a hashtag that public radio stations and friends will be using on election night as we tweet about the results coming from around the state. For our TX Decides project, we ask Texans to send us questions about the election, and we're answering the ones most frequently asked. One of them came from Tim Campbell in Austin. He wanted to know how election district boundaries are drawn and who decides that. Here's Tim.
How have Texas district lines been drawn? What's the political fallout and policy fallout from how these lines are drawn and redrawn?
Christopher Connolly from KERA in North Texas has the answer.
6 years ago, Tim Campbell moved from Minnesota to Austin for grad school. After he graduated, he said he started to wonder about the politicians who represented him. So he looked at his congressional district, and he was surprised to learn that it goes all the way from central Austin, where he lives, to the south suburbs of Fort Worth. And he got to wondering,
how does it happen, and who's responsible for deciding how they're drawn?
That seems like an easy question. The Texas Constitution is clear. After each census, the legislature creates maps for state and congressional legislative districts, and the governor signs off. In reality, it's never that simple. New maps usually launch lengthy legal battles.
It is always true, whether in sports or in politics, that the rules are going to affect the way the game is played.
Rebecca Dean chairs the political science department at UT Arlington. She says legally, districts have to be compact, contiguous, and contain an equal population. The Voting Rights Act says districts can't be drawn to reduce the voting power of communities of color. Lawmakers can make districts more winnable for their political party, though. And Dean says both Republicans and Democrats do it.
Political parties want to draw the lines so that they are more likely to keep power and to keep their opposition from getting power.
After the last census, the Republican-dominated Texas legislature started drawing new maps. Kel Seliger chaired the Senate's redistricting committee. In 2011, Texas Tribune's Evan Smith asked Seliger whether redistricting should be depoliticized.
What do you think about that?
We ought to take the calories out of fried chicken, too.
But not entirely possible.
Right.
Still, Seliger said he wanted to be bipartisan.
We're trying to do it as any other bill that in the Senate is going to require some votes from Republicans and Democrats.
After half a decade of legal wrangling, Democratic Congressman Mark Vesey says the maps drawn by the Republican-led Texas legislature fell short.
It was really meant and designed to discriminate against Black and Hispanic voters and maximize Republican seats.
Vesey says that's why Tim Campbell, our question asker, ended up in that district that confuses him.
You end up having districts that split Travis County up into five different pieces. You have districts that run from Fort Worth to Austin.
The maps were quickly challenged in court for violating the Voting Rights Act. A federal court drew new maps, which Texas challenged. The Supreme Court got involved, and the maps were revised again. Those are pretty much the maps we're voting with in November, even though the lawsuits continue.
This is the best we can do given what we got.
Lydia Camarillo heads up the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project, one of the groups involved in the ongoing lawsuits. She says the 2010 census showed huge growth in the state's Latino population, and it's not right that the new maps didn't reflect that.
Not only were they working to dilute the vote of Latinos and other communities, but they were intentionally drawing the maps to dilute our political influence.
In Fort Worth, I'm Christopher Connolly.
We all know Texas is a red state, right? Democrats haven't won a statewide election here since 1994, and Republicans have carried the state in every presidential election since 1976. And that got Gilda Garcia of San Antonio wondering.
I remember growing up, my parents always talking about Texas being all Democratic. So what happened?
Ben Philpott from KUT in Austin says it's complicated.
Let's start with what happened to voters. Even when Texans voted for Democrats, this was a conservative state. It was still a two-party state, but the parties were conservative Democrat and moderate Democrat. Up until the 1970s, voting for Democrats is just what you did.
A lot of Southerners would be Democrats back then, and so they would inherit the Democratic Party from their parents on down, their grandparents and so on.
That's Lynn Foster. He grew up a Democrat in Oklahoma, but then he came to Texas in the late 70s, just like hundreds of thousands of others did. The state's economy was booming. Matthew Dowd says the people that came here brought even more conservative ideas with them. Dowd's worked on several political campaigns, including President George W. Bush's 2004 re-election.
The movement here of people from around the country that settled here were people that were coming here because they wanted lower taxes, or they were coming here because they didn't like regulations, or they're coming here because they had a greater degree of freedom.
Okay, so more conservatives were moving to Texas, but like Foster, many were still Democrats. Changing that took encouragement or discouragement from the parties. Dowd says that began with the parties moving away from the middle in the 1960s.
The brands of the two political parties, the way they became and the way they moved to the outer edges, the Democratic brand becoming more liberal or progressive, the Republican brand becoming more conservative.
Our former Democrat, Lynn Foster, felt his beliefs better aligned with conservative Republicans. So in 1980, he went to the polls and voted for Ronald Reagan.
There were a lot of conservatives where I worked. It was a military contractor. I got to listening to what they were saying and seeing what the Democratic Party was doing, and I decided that they were right and the Democrat Party was wrong.
And the GOP followed up that win at the ballot box with wins in back rooms. There were meetings to convince business groups that had given money to Democrats for decades to start funding Republican campaigns. And, says Matthew Dowd, meetings with conservative Democrats on the brink of losing their next election.
There was a lot of convincing that Republicans were doing for Democratic office holders saying, you better switch or you're going to get beat. And that happened. They were just basically ran the numbers for him and said, look at how the number, if you want to hold office, you better switch parties.
And switch they did. Probably the most famous one being a West Texas Democrat named Rick Perry. In Austin, I'm Ben Philpott.
And that's it for this special Fronteras election program, TX Decides. Public radio stations across Texas urge you to tune in Tuesday night beginning at 7 p.m. for live election night coverage. And join our conversation by tweeting with the hashtag TX Decides. You can find the TX Decides answers and other election information at our website, tpr.org. Thanks to Alexis Yancey for producing this broadcast. Chironga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Shelley Koffler at Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.